When I say that I believe in God, I mean specifically that I believe in the God of the Bible. But more than that, I believe that God is essential to our survival. And I noticed in our God, He is alive, there is a phrase in there that's very similar to this, and it kind of struck me. I hadn't thought about it whenever I prepared this lesson. But indeed, God is necessary. God is self-actuating, and He is eternal. He is all-powerful. He is the creator of all that is, whether it be animal, mineral, vegetable, everything. Everything emanates from God. And I believe that God is the most logical explanation for all that cannot be explained or proven by science. But they are essential to our continued existence. In Colossians 1, 16, 17, by Him all things were created that are in heaven and that are on earth, visible, invisible, thrones or dominions or principalities or powers, all things were created through Him and for Him, and He is before all things, and in Him all things consist. Now the consist is the idea of being sustained by Him. Now, question. It's true that God cannot be proven by scientific method. But what is the scientific method? Well, here it is. It is a process containing five steps, and these steps are necessary to establishing scientific evidence. First of all, we must identify a problem we would like to solve. Second, we must formulate a hypothesis. Third, we must test this hypothesis. And we must, of course, produce empirical evidence for the proof of this hypothesis. And then fourth, we must collect and analyze all of the data and then make conclusions based upon these facts that we have gained. But belief in the God of heaven requires a certain degree of faith. In Hebrews 11 and verse 6, Paul wrote, "But without faith, it is impossible to please Him. For he who comes to God must believe that He is, and that He is a rewarder of those who diligently seek Him." This calls for faith. In fact, it tells us that without faith, we cannot possibly please God. It is an impossibility. But faith is not blind acceptance without facts or foundation. In Romans chapter 10 and verses 10 and 11, Paul writes, "For with the heart one believes unto righteousness, with the mouth confession is made unto salvation. For the scripture says, whoever believes on Him will not be put to shame." Now, this means that if we place our trust in Him, we will never be disappointed. Now, that can't be said of people in general, because people will disappoint us. But God, we can indeed have faith in. God is spirit, and so He cannot be seen, but He can be observed. Notice this. Jesus made the statement to His disciples, "Behold my hands and my feet, that it is I myself. Handle me and see, for a spirit does not have flesh and bones as you see I have." Jesus knew that they were wondering, this has got to be a spirit, because we've seen him dead. Got to be a spirit. But he says, no, I'm not a spirit. You can't see a spirit. You can't see a spirit. We accept many things as existing, although we cannot see them. For instance, we cannot see the wind. I can see the wind. I walk right outside and see the wind blow. No, you can't. What you see are the effects of the wind. You can take a magnet. You can put it near another magnet of the same polarity, and it will cause it to move. But you can't see anything there. You just know that it moves. But we accept that as a fact. We can't see it, but we can accept it as a fact. The creation, though, proves that there is, in fact, a creator. There cannot be anything created that does not have a creator. Turn to Romans chapter 1, verses 18 through 21 with me, please. Paul says, the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth and unrighteousness, because what may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to them. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhood. We understand that God created all things. We didn't see him create it. But the fact that it exists, think about this, the fact that it exists is evidence that somebody created it. And that is the evidence that we stand on. Notice with me, if you will, in science there are the laws of thermodynamics. Most of you are familiar with these, or at least vaguely acquainted with them. But the first law is something cannot come from nothing. Now that's scientific proof, or evidence, I should say. Something cannot come from nothing. Well, that's true scientifically. And the second law of thermodynamics is life cannot come from non-life. You see, scientists recognize that you can't take a rock and produce life. They understand that. It's impossible. But you take a living organism and you can have a living organism produced from it. It's just science. But notice the chaos theory explained via quantum physics affirms that systems proceed from order to disorder, not vice versa. Now think about that a minute. Given the Big Bang theory, which caused total disorder and disarray, there came order? Scientific method does not accept that as a possibility. Why do they accept it? Well, because it's one way to prove that God didn't have anything to do with it. And when they get to that point, they're willing to accept just about anything. The order that exists in the universe, dear ones, demands a design and a designer. He had a design in mind, and the designer made it. And that's why the universe functions perfectly. All of these calculations that are run before they launch a missile up out of the atmosphere and into space are run depending upon the order that God set. Think about it. If it was just a mass of chaos, there'd be no way of predicting where the moon would be at a certain time, where the sun would be at a certain time, because it would be chaotic. But they can calculate where to put that missile so that it'll land out there on a distant planet that we can't even comprehend how far that is. That boggles the mind. But they can do it because the universe had a designer. But skeptics fail. That's already past that. Skeptics fail in every attempt to disprove the existence of God. The method by which science agrees upon to make it impossible to disprove God. They have a method and it won't work. That's what it really amounts to. They cannot disprove God. Their denials of God are utterly unscientific. They are unscientific. In fact, it requires more faith than it takes to accept God, to accept their theories, because they're so far out. In fact, we have seen the very laws which they accept to disprove all of their theories when put into practice. Put into practice. Time and again, noteworthy scientists, and this is a real note of exposure to the scientific community. How many times have scientists been caught skewing data in order to prove their theories that they knew were false to begin with? Think about it. This is especially true in the evolutionary area. They have dug up bones and declared these bones to be so many million years old. And then it's been proven that these people just created a false piece of evidence. But they were so desperate to try and make their theory true. So desperate. But what happens to people of faith, though? What happens to us? Well, people of faith are ridiculed by skeptics. Ridiculed. They try to paint us as a mindless bunch of followers of superstition. They make jokes about it and laugh about it. They demonstrate their own biased nature by twisting data. But you know, I'm reminded of something here that kind of comes to the forefront when I think about that. In Psalm 14 and verse 1, David, as a prophet of God, said, "The fool has said in his heart, there is no God." Stop there for a moment. Who is a fool? Well, the one who says in his heart, there is no God. That's who's a fool. David says they are corrupt. They have done abominable works. And there is none who does good. It's almost as if he had a preview of today's scientific community laying on the desk in front of him. Because that's exactly right. Exactly right. Now, suppose though, just for a moment, let's suppose that all they claim is true. Just for a moment. Let's suppose that there was, or there is no God, or there, in the past tense, was no God as a creator. But what would life be? If there's no God, there would be no ultimate good or evil. Think about that for a minute. If there's no God, there is no ultimate good or evil. And the foundational values of all legal systems come from God. Have you ever wondered why some things are found in all legal systems? Doesn't matter what the language is. The same principles are found. Well, in the beginning, there was one source of right and wrong. You know what that was? That was God. One source of right and wrong. All of mankind springs forth from Adam and, of course, necessarily inferred through Noah. And they all have a common origin. As man spread across the globe, he took with him the system, the same system of moral values. Now, granted, I know you're going to say, well, but you know, this culture and that culture, they don't have any morality or they don't have. But he had it. What happened? Well, through the ages, his ancestors decided to throw it away. They gave it up. They didn't want to have that restraint on it. And quite frankly, we can see the same thing happening to us today. We have a society that has people in it that want to throw out moral values. They basically want to take apart the laws of the land to allow them to do anything and everything that they want to do. That's what we're faced with. But that doesn't mean that they're not placed there by God. God places within all men the basic sense of right and wrong. In Romans 1 and verse 19, Paul says, because what may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to them. In other words, there is no excuse. In Jude verse 10, Jude says, but these speak evil of whatever they do not know. And whatever they know naturally, like brute beasts, in these things they corrupt themselves. They have chosen to act like animals. That's what he says. And I'll tell you right now, that is what's wrong with our society. Too many people have chosen to act like animals. And we, of course, reap all of the harvest of that. Men everywhere, though, have the knowledge that it is wrong to kill another man, to rape, to steal, and etc., etc., etc. No one has to teach basic morals of principles of morality. Basic principles. But some people don't get it. They don't want it. And so it's rejected by them. Man is created by God as the only living creature with a conscience. Oh, I heard about that this morning. I didn't mean these two lessons overlap, but they kind of did. But this is true. Man is the only creature that God created with a conscience. Think about it. When a bear destroys your automobile in order to get a candy bar, he doesn't feel guilty. When the same bear kills a man to get a candy bar, he feels no remorse. In fact, he'd do it again. Without an absolute moral code, we as a nation would have no grounds to prosecute a tyrant. On what basis would you do it? If the highest authority in the state says we have no grounds, what would they do with someone like Hitler? Well, he just had his own morality, and No, we don't believe that. We don't believe that. By German law, it was legal to exterminate those of inferior races. That was the law. In Germany, it was socially acceptable to kill Jews. And also, I might mention, Jehovah's Witnesses were in there too. Yeah. If the state happens to be the highest authority, all one needs to do is get control of the government. We have no way of stopping that. And if society sets a standard, whether something is right or wrong, that will be something that will be constantly changing. Every time we turn around, something else that once was wrong is now right. And so it goes. In the American South, slaves were accepted as of less value than a horse. And stealing a slave brought a fine or imprisonment, but stealing a horse meant hanging. They hanged horse thieves. You see what I mean? There can be absolute authority only if there is a supreme being above man. Remember what I said. God is necessary to our survival. And unless there is a supreme being above man, we are without absolute authority, and there is no such thing as lasting justice. Without absolute authority, chaos will be the eventual result. That's what will happen. If there was no God, there would be no hope for the downtrodden masses, those who live in desperate circumstances. They hang on. Why? Because God holds out hope for them. Those who live with constant pain look to God with the hope of no pain in an eternal home with Him. Those who live in inescapable poverty look forward to a home in heaven. Those who live under oppression need the hope of a better life in heaven. When the oppressed cannot find justice on earth, God gives them hope. Slaves turn to God for the hope of something better than the misery they were forced to live in. Imagine hopelessness of a life with no anticipation of anything better. Take God out of the picture. Take Him out of the picture. Just imagine the hopelessness of it. It would cause some to become aggressive, some to be violent. Many would give up and just exist until they died. And by the way, that's the society we're living in. That's the reason why some want to justify euthanasia. Well, you know, life's lost all of its luster and no more fun anymore, so let's just check out. And incidentally, that's also behind the suicides, many of the suicides that happen today. This life is all there is and it ain't that great, so I'm checking out. But if there's no God, why not? Why not? But if there was no God, there would be no restraint to the wicked. If there was no judgment beyond civil law, sin would run rampant. Civil law is just a standard that the majority or the powerful agree upon. And if civil law allows anything that the masses want, and incidentally, that standards, when it's run that way, continue to fall, you have more and more lawlessness. Prohibition forbade the consumption of alcohol. What was the solution to that problem? Well, it's legal now, and now that people are drinking it and killing each other on the street, driving drunk. We really fixed that problem, didn't we? Homosexuality used to be a crime. Now you say something against it, you're a criminal. You see how society has changed? Life used to be protected. Now it's a woman's right to choose. And helpless little children are killed mercilessly day by day. Without absolute moral authority over man, any society can become a Sodom. And we know how God felt about that. We know. If there's no judgment beyond civil law, man is going to do whatever he can get away with. And some think they're smarter than law enforcement today. How do I know that? I love to watch car chases. Because you know what happens? No matter what they do, no matter how hard they try, that helicopter's flying over, keeping an eye on them, and when they bail and they get in their hiding spot, pretty soon there's a big police dog on top of them. And that's the mild cases. Some of them end up in a shootout. But they're not smarter than the authorities. They just think they are. They think they're going to get away with it. When the masses overwhelm law enforcement, they can eventually get away with crime, though. And you say, well, now just a minute. Now, you said that they couldn't get away from the police. No, that's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is keep on committing the crime, and finally the police say, you know what? That crime isn't worth prosecuting any longer. And you want to know what I'm talking about? I'm talking about gambling over sports. Oh, this used to be something that, we came down on that with both feet. But it's become so popular and so prevalent, we don't hear about anybody being prosecuted much anymore. Don't hear about it. Why? Because the public attitude towards sports gambling, nobody wants to say it's wrong. Now, yes, there'll be some cases where people will be cheating, like in boxing. I've heard of many cases where people have been fixing a boxing match and for the purposes of gambling, and some have gotten caught and prosecuted. But in general, a football game, that's put some money down on the football game, good chance to make a buck. But the fact is, it is still illegal. The real attitude, though, that is necessary here is people voluntarily submit to laws of basic moral values. They voluntarily submit. They are not forced to submit. Now, that means that people who do not believe in God have little motivation to submit to authority. That's for the goody-two-shoes people. That's not for me. And you'd be surprised. There's a lot of people in this society today who live above the law. That is, the law doesn't apply to them. They just do what they want to do. They just do what they want to do. Rules cannot be imposed consistently or imposed for a long period of time on an unwilling population. And, you know, if there's no God, what argument do you have for this? Don't have one. If there's no God. If there's no God, actually, life would lose its meaning. Think about that. It would lose its meaning. For centuries, people have sought the meaning of life. You know, some people have concluded you're born, you live, you reproduce, and you die. And that's it. And that's all they see life as. There's no real meaning to it. The gurus, so-called, have gone to the mountains of Tibet to meditate for years in mountain caves. And guess what? They come back no smarter than they were when they went. All they do generally is lose their health and get arthritis real bad. But many people have sought the meaning of life and financial gain. Now, if there's no God, well, man, money's where it's at. Solomon, though, recognized this to be a folly. Solomon said in Ecclesiastes chapter 18. No, that's not wrong, right? That's supposed to be chapter 2, 18 through 23. I had it right up here, but not down there. Chapter 2, verses 18 through 23. I hated all my labor in which I had toiled under the sun, because I must leave it to the man who will come after me. Think about it. What is all this stuff you've got together? I just got to give it to the person who comes after me. That's all. And who knows whether he'll be wise or a fool? Yet he will rule over all my labor in which I toil and in which I have shown myself wise under the sun. This also is vanity. Therefore I turn my heart and despaired of all the labor in which I had toiled under the sun. For there is a man whose labor is with wisdom and knowledge and skill. Yet he must leave his heritage to a man who has not labored for it. This also is vanity and a great evil. For what has a man for all his labor and for striving of his heart with which he has toiled under the sun? For all his days are sorrowful, and his work burdensome. Even in the night, his heart takes no rest. This also is vanity. What it comes down to is this, folks. Things mean nothing without God to give them meaning. Some seek the meaning of life in other people. They look at their family and their friends and different organizations and so forth. But what happens? What happens? Oh, children, though, grow up. Oh, I got ahead of myself. Children grow up. And they get their own lives. And grandchildren lose interest in grandparents even faster than children do. And they go their way. And when people are gone, what does that leave you with? Remember, there's no God. Life pretty much loses its meaning. But like Solomon, many modern Americans have sought the meaning of life. And it looks to me like we got ourselves, we got the same chart over again. Ah, there we go. Oh, I know that. That's good stuff. Only God gives meaning to our life. And we understand this in the fact that He created us in His image. We are created in the image of God. Male and female, He created them. But more than this, We are created for Him. Think about that. In Colossians 1, 16 and 17, for by Him all things were created that are in heaven and on earth, visible, invisible, thrones, dominions, power. All things were created through Him and for Him. Get that? For Him. The purpose that Jesus has for us is to bring glory to Him. In Colossians 1 and verse 18, He's the head of the body, the church, beginning of the firstborn from the dead, that in all things He may have the preeminence. We have meaning to our lives because of this. But it is only when we live in compliance, when we live in compliance to God's purpose for us, that our lives really have meaning. The earth and all that is in it, according to Peter, will pass away. All of it. But God has a use for us. And that use is to exalt His name in the spiritual realm, and to bring glory and honor to Him. So when we make decisions in this life, we must consider His will when we make those decisions. How does my marrying this person work to the glory of God? Will my working in this place achieve the glory of God? Each morning, we should plan our day to bring glory to God's name, seeking to do His will in the prayers that we offer to Him. You know, there's really nothing wrong with the most things we do in this life, but we only find meaning in life while living according to God's plan. This world needs God in order to even exist. All that is in this world is finite. Finite. God holds it together by the word of His might. And God is the one who provides order in a world that is bent toward chaos. Without God, the downtrodden have no hope. It's only fear of an eternal accounting that restrains the wicked. And He only gives us true meaning for our lives when we are walking according to His will. Now, what course are you pursuing? Just a suggestion. And I'm not going to collect these, by the way, but just a suggestion. Each one of us evaluate our lives and write a description of the course that our life has been following thus far. Now, since you're not going to let anyone else see this, you can be very honest in this. To this point, what has been the purpose of your life? And while you're at it, try to summarize your life in 10 words or less. What is it all about? You know, each person's journey requires some periodic adjustments in order to stay on course in the narrow path. But in 100 years, what will be the significance of your having been on this earth? That's serious thought. What will your life be like then? in the eyes of others, what will it be like? You ought to think about these things more than occasionally, because they're serious. They are eternally important. I trust that you'll take these thoughts and make application of them where necessary.